Good morning, everyone. For those who doesn't know me, my name is Daniel, and I'm from Alma. I've been here for about 2 years now. And for those who know me, well, I'm sorry then. You can see. You probably have seen this advert before. It's one of the Hugo Boss advertising campaigns. As you may probably guess, advertising campaigns are not cheap. And, companies like Hugo Boss would pay millions of pounds or even more to get an advertising campaign like this one, which means that if they are paying all this money, they still expect to get a lot more in return. So when they do that, they really want to make sure that the advert is actually persuasive enough to get people to buy the product. So what I want you to do now is to look at the picture again and tell me, and I mean tell me, why do you think this advert is persuasive? Any idea? Good. I don't think I'd buy it for that. Any other idea? Yeah. Looks cool. What about the slogan? Yeah, right. I think, that's quite an old one actually, but I remember hearing people saying this in the street. And the slogan is the thing that people could remember and say. And I think the interesting thing is that this is very appealing to people in our society. We like having our own way. We like doing what we want and not being told what we have to do. That's the dream of many people, really. Make your own rules, be your own boss, and if possible, get people to do what you want to do. Is there anyone here that has ever wished something like that, even roughly? I have. And surely I'm not alone. Modern people are tired of structures, tired of being told what to do, tired of obeying things without questioning as if they were in the army. They are tired of anything that sounds like putting limits to their freedom. Of course, if you work in a place where your boss is a bit kind of a dictator, well, you may really think of that and you may be right, but even in the case that we are told to do something that we know is good for us, even in that case, we normally prefer doing the things we like. And we may think that this is maybe an illness from our modern world, but it is not actually. In the text that we've been reading in Genesis, we find that this is actually the problem from the beginning. This passage in Genesis 3 gives us a glimpse of what life is when we live outside God's terms. And this is what we are going to look at this morning, what life is when we live outside God's terms. But before we move to that, I'd like to make a short stop and talk about a couple of things that I think will help us to make sense of the text. Because if we want to read the text on its own terms rather than imposing a careless reading, I think it's important to understand why and when this text was written, and probably to solve a few doubts that we may have. For example, why on earth do I have to pay for what Adam did if I wasn't even there? So, why do I have to pay? I mean, have you ever thought about that? I wasn't there. Adam sinned, but that's fine, he was punished, but why do I have to pay for it? Well, that really shows how far our world is from the biblical world. We live in a very individualistic society, but the Jews at that time, their culture was not really like that. There was almost no notion, no knowledge of an individual outside a group or a family. So if someone does something wrong, the whole group, the whole family gets wrong, the whole family fails. If someone succeeds, the whole group takes the success. It is difficult to find something similar in our society because we are very eager to point to people when they do something wrong and just get the blame out of ourselves. But I think we can find something similar in what we call teamwork. In a team, if you make a mistake, someone makes a mistake, the whole team fails. And they may think you are the one who made the mistake, but still it's the whole team that fails. I don't know if you have been watching The Apprentice on TV, but that's what happened, actually. I mean, someone gets the blame and someone gets fired, but it's the whole team that actually loses, and the other team is the one who can enjoy a night out or whatever. So, in this sense, Adam's sin is not just Adam's sin, it's the humanity's sin. Adam is not just Adam himself, but representative of us all. And there is something else that has to be said about that. As many others that have been before, I don't read these chapters in a literal way. And I think reading these chapters of Genesis as face value is what the writer intended for these chapters. And certainly it's not been the way that it's been read so far in history until very recently, really. Genesis 3, then, makes more sense if we read it, as I think was the writer's intention, as a paradigmatic text, something that gives us an example of what we are rather than what Adam was. And so, Genesis 3 doesn't show us what a particular human being, Adam, did, but what we all do whenever we have the chance to do it. So it's not just him, it's about us. As a writer in the second century put it, Adam is therefore not the cause, except only for himself, but each of us has been the Adam of his own soul. It is not that Adam brought death upon us, but rather that because we choose not to obey God, we bring death upon us. We don't have to blame Adam. Actually, we do it ourselves every time. And then when we do that, we decide to live outside God's terms. And this is actually a common idea in the Old Testament. If we, for example, read in Deuteronomy 30, we find the same idea, and I'm going to read this text. And as I read the text, I want you to listen for key ideas, key words like death and life, as we find in Genesis 3, curse and blessing, getting into the land or being expelled from it. And you will see that this is a very key issue for people in the Old Testament. This is the text. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. But if your heart turns away and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God. Listen to his voice and hold fast to him, for the Lord is your life. I think you can see clearly how these ideas go all through the Old Testament. And I think that you can see clearly and join with me, hopefully, that the Adam story is not about Adam, it's about you. It's about every one of us. So there is no excuse, because Adam is not only part of our team, so if he fails, we fail. Adam is actually every one of us. And when we choose to obey anything or anyone but God, we bring death upon us. And it's only when we choose to follow Jesus and the God of Jesus that we can overcome our sinful nature. So there is no way we can blame Adam for what we do, because this is what actually they did in that chapter, blaming someone else. A second thing that I think it's good to be aware of is why and when this text was written. And it's important because it was written for a reason, with a purpose. And, well, this is a very complicated issue, and there are many theories about that. We are not going to go there. But generally speaking, most people would accept that this chapter, Genesis, actually, and indeed the whole Pentateuch, was written when Israel was coming back from exile into the land again. At this time, Genesis means something very important, because that, the coming back from exile, it's a very important point in history for Israel. They were God's chosen people. They had been living in God's chosen land, enjoying the blessings, and they find themselves outside the land without God, because God was only present in the temple with them. And now they are just thinking, well, what's going to happen now? Are we still God's people? Are we still holding the covenant? Is God failed to his promise? Who is responsible for that? And this text is written at this time, or put together at this time. And I think it's important that we keep that in mind when we go reading. I won't keep repeating that idea, because I think it shows and gives an answer of who is responsible for what has happened to Israel. And if you want, we can apply that to ourselves, to our church, to the global church, to our own lives. Who is responsible for what is happening in Israel? Why did we fail so miserably? I think now we are ready then to look at what life outside God's terms mean. But what are God's terms anyway? We find this in Genesis 2, something we preached 2 weeks ago. Chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. There is where God says to Adam and Eve that they can eat from any tree in the garden, the one they really prefer, even the tree of life, but not from the tree of good and evil. And basically, God is giving freedom to the couple to do whatever they like, except that one thing. And if we remember that this text is actually paradigmatic, the tree is actually symbolic as well. And this means that what God is proposing here is something a bit more different. It's not just about food. God is really giving freedom to them to do whatever they want, really whatever they want, except disobeying, except not trusting God. And so this one command, not eating from the tree, symbolizes the trust or lack of trust in the Creator. It's not about whether they eat or not from the tree. It's about whether they obey or not God. It's trusting that God has provided for them everything they need. And then the snake comes and challenges this trust by implying that God has actually kept something away from them. Because the reason he gives for God to keep them away from the tree is not that they will die, but that they will become like God, and that's very tempting for them. So they then decide to trust the snake rather than God, and they put themselves in a situation where they are outside God's terms, outside God's original plan. So living in God's terms means trusting God and therefore obeying Him. Trusting that God will provide and do anything that is good for us, for His creatures, and not doubting about His word. Adam and Eve lost their trust in God, and so they didn't obey the only command they were given. And now the story will show us what are the implications of living outside God's original plan. And life outside God's terms means conflicting relationships with the rest of creation. One of the things that is going to change after that decision that humankind took is that our relationship with the rest of creation is going to be difficult now. It is very interesting to compare chapter 2 that we've been preaching in the last 2 weeks, where God presents His original plan, with chapter 3, where Adam messes all up. In the first verses of chapter 2, we read that God plants the garden, which is actually almost self-contained, because He puts the rivers and the garden waters itself, and that's very easy. Actually, Adam is given the task to keep for it, but I don't think there's much to do, really. Then God puts Adam in the garden, which is actually the best place in creation, because there is where people can meet with God face to face. And they have food available, they just have to reach out and take it. He names the animals, which means somehow that we rule over them. But then we come to chapter 3, and the scene changes completely, because man has decided to live outside God's terms. And so everything that was harmonious and pleasant before turns to a conflicting and difficult relationship. If before Adam and Eve were put in the best place of creation, where they could enjoy God's presence, now they are expelled from the garden, and they can't enjoy the presence of God anymore. If before their only task was to keep the garden, which, as I said, sounds fairly easy, now they will have to work outside, a work that will be painful for them, a work that will be hard for them. If before they could just reach and take fruit from the trees, now they will have to really fight for the food, and it's going to be painful. It's going to be a huge effort and a struggle. Animals that were ruled by humankind before, now in the snake, we see that they turn against us and they are leading humanity astray. And in the curse, we can see that God is saying to the snake, as maybe a representative of the whole of the animals, that there will be an eternal struggle between the snake's descendants and the human's descendants. So in short, there is a battle between humanity and creation. And I think today we can really see that in a world that is really worried about, or not as worried as we should, that is worried about global warming and climate change. I think we should ask ourselves whether we have been doing what we were supposed to do of keeping God's creation. And I think we haven't. We didn't obey that command. We didn't trust that keeping God's creation was better for us than just abusing it. We thought that our ways were better, and now we can see that distrusting God has created a very difficult situation for us, actually, because we are losing our world, really. But that was not the only thing that was affected by our decision of living outside God's terms. because the failure in observing God's rules has also brought conflicting relationships among us. Which means that life outside God's terms means conflicting relationships with each other. 2 weeks ago, we talked about creation, the creation of both Adam and Eve. And the reason given in chapter 2 for the creation of Eve, of the woman, is that Adam didn't have a suitable helper for him. And seeing this, God says, okay, let's do a suitable helper for Adam. So he creates Eve, and Eve is the perfect partner for Adam, as Adam is the perfect partner for Eve. Someone who can really complement him as he can be her perfect complement. They both live in the garden and enjoy almost a perfect relationship. But again, deciding to take things in their own way rather than follow God's counsel causes this perfect relationship to crash. Everything that was so good at the beginning is turned into a problem. I think it's worth saying now that actually humankind is not cursed. It's only the snake that is cursed, and the ground because of human sin. So rather than punishing us, God punished the earth and spares us. But still, we are not cursed, and still things go really bad. And the funny thing is that we are so brilliant that we don't even need to be cursed to make things worse. Their eyes are now open because they've eaten from the tree that they were not allowed to. And somehow they managed to actually break their own relationship without even God being present. So we can see that they now know they've done something wrong, because they know they've broken the only rule that was given to them. And because they feel something new, this sense of guilt that they didn't have before. Now they don't want to carry the blame, so they blame each other. So Adam blames Eve, Eve blames the snake, and no one wants to take responsibility for what they've done. Not only that, Adam, knowing that he's done wrong, the second thing he does is blaming God for putting the woman there, which is brilliant, actually. So they start having problems within them. That relationship that was perfect at the beginning, when they were supposed to be suitable help for each other, turns into a conflicting relationship with where anyone wants to be over the other, and they want to actually blame the other. And as we will see soon, if we keep reading in the following chapters of Genesis, this problem is not only a man-woman problem. We will see that Cain and Abel extends this problem, this curse, if you want, to the whole of human relationships. So now, according to verse 16, what was a perfect relationship turns to be a relationship where man is supposed to control, to rule over the woman, and the woman to will for the freedom of that relationship. And I want you please to know that this is actually not what God planned. That's not the original plan of God. That's what happened to be after we, or Adam, messes all things up. So we can really use this text to impose a hierarchy of dominion or whatever. And there is really no need for many examples to prove that human relationships are not as smooth as we would wish to. We just need to turn on the TV and see the news, and we will see again the problem between USA and Russia, the conflict in Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, or if we come closer to us, sexual slavery from immigrants, domestic violence maybe in our next door neighbors, and a really very long list. And if we come even closer, I think probably my wife could tell a few things about times when I haven't been really that suitable helper that I should. And if any one of you is without sin, then let him be the first to throw the stone. But we really all make relationships difficult to someone else. It might be at work, in the family, here in church, or anywhere. The thing is that because normally we love ourselves more than we love each other, we just don't like to take the blame, we just don't like to do an extra effort to help someone else, we just don't want to do even our job, we rather let someone else do our job. And the fact is that we are not an innocent part in that problem. And so, we get to the last thing that got damaged. So far, Adam's very eager desire to have his say over against God's terms for his creation has resulted in a conflicting relationship between us and the rest of creation. It's also turned difficult, the relationships between us, all human relationships. But finally, and much worse, the result is that our relationship with God, it's also turned very difficult. Adam and Eve were there in the garden. They enjoyed an idyllic relationship with God. God would walk in the garden, meet with them, talk to them. But when they decided to disobey, they knew they had ruined it all. And so, the first thing they do when they know God is around, it's hide. They can face it. They know they've done wrong. Yet, as I said before, Adam is bold enough to go and blame him for putting the woman with him to make things even better. So, what was a perfect relationship with God, where they could meet in the Garden of Eden, is turned in a relationship where we can't really face our God anymore because we are guilty and we feel that. And it may appear, if you read the text, that this is maybe all that it can be said about the relationship between man and God. But no, it actually gets worse. As we already know, Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden. And we have also said before that the garden was the best place in creation because actually that was the place where they could meet with God. So being outside the garden means that they can't meet with God anymore. Even if they wanted to, which they won't because they hide, even if they wanted, they can't because they are out of God's presence, out of the garden. And only if God in his grace decides to take the extra mile, they can meet with God. But they can do nothing to meet with him now. Could it get any worse? Yes, it can. When God tells them in chapter 2 not to eat from the tree of good and evil, he also tells them that if they do eat from the tree, they will surely die. But they don't die, right? Wrong. They do die. By being banned from the tree of life, they are effectively doomed to die. But that's actually quite far in the future. They do actually die then and there. Because in the Old Testament, physical death, though it's bad and nobody wants to die, is not really a big deal. In the Jewish mentality, real death is not being in God's presence. It is worse to be physically alive but banned from God's presence than being actually dead. That's what Jewish would think, and you would find this especially in the wisdom books. So being outside the garden means that they are actually dead because they can't be in God's presence, which is life. So they do die, and that's what happened to us. when we refuse to do what God wants us to do. And that is actually what life outside God's terms mean. Problems in our relationships with God's creation, problems in our relationship with each other, and problems in our relationship with God. And all that because we prefer doing what we feel like doing rather than obeying God in what we know is best for us. So to finish, we should remember that this text was actually for the Jews when they were back from exile. And so it can be now for us to get a glimpse of what or where we may end up if we decide not to follow God's plan. It is not that we don't know or we haven't seen already how bad is the world outside. But it's a reminder of the fact that it is our responsibility. God hasn't failed to his promise. God hasn't break any of his rules. If anything, if he has failed, actually, it's for our good, because actually Israel should have been just out of the land, and they are back when they are actually thinking of this. So if at any point God decides to break his covenant, it's always for our good, not to make things worse. So next time we ask ourselves why things are so wrong, why church is not going as we think it should go, because I think we can say church globally, it's growing in many countries. What about Europe? What about Bristol? What about in Alma? If our relationships are not going as well as they should be, we should really ask whether we are doing things the right way. It may, of course, be that we have a bad boss. There are bad bosses out there. But we may have something else to do as well in that. So when things are going wrong, we better check whether we are actually in God's plan or we are not. And I'd like to finish just saying that even so, there is hope always. Even though we do bad, God provided for them clothes to cover their shame, to make them feel that they were acceptable again. So there is hope always for us. Yet, we are supposed to obey before getting there. Thank you.